Hello, Giles Croft from Nottingham Playhouse. I outed myself as a prick yesterday, so continuing the theme. There are some things that haven't been said which seem to me to be worth saying, and also I run an organisation that gets a significant amount of money, and you know, the voice of those organisations I think should be heard, even if then it's to be knocked down. The first thing is to say that not every artist is good. And we have to acknowledge that, and some artists need to be stopped, to be right honest. Often, a good craftsman is better than a bad artist, and the ability to learn craft is hugely important here, and this has all been couched in the term of the artist, but I work with a huge number of people who deliver really excellent work, but I don't know that they're artists. They are very, very capable at delivering fantastically interesting projects, but they probably wouldn't see themselves as artists, and I think that's also worth acknowledging. The audience. We make work that's seen between 130 and 150,000 people every year. Actually, they are part of the process. They are part of the learning. And this idea that actually delaying, and I know not everybody's arguing for this, before getting that work seen is not always positive. Sometimes you want to get it seen early to learn, to pick up a bit on what was said yesterday. But actually it is also about having that response. The artist has a responsibility, maybe that's the wrong word, but certainly has a relationship with an audience. And the audience also have the right to let that artist know what that work is good or bad at. The artist may then choose to ignore it, of course. The other thing is that organisations such as Nottingham Playhouse, and not every organisation is the same, do also invest in all sorts of ranges of projects. We've spent 2 years developing a project which is for people with profound disabilities, which takes place in a pod, which is just for six people and their carers, and it can only go into very particular places. But that's been a huge investment and a project which nobody knows about except those people that are engaged in it. I'm working on a project with a local writer called Michelle Vashiana, which is a one-woman 50-minute piece, which I, as the artistic director, taking up on that point of taking small projects, I'm investing a lot of my time in over the next few months. And so I think the idea that there are organisations out there such as ours may be available for the sorts of projects other artists are looking for is also worth noting. We're not just big organisations that put on plays, you know, that rehearse for 3 weeks. We do all sorts of other things, and we're available and willing. But very often we're locally based. Mm. And that's another hugely important point. And I made it yesterday. The work that we do, significant amount of the work that we do, is with the artists locally who may never be known beyond College Street or Nottingham or Nottinghamshire. It makes it no less valuable. In fact, in some ways, it's even more important that they're working, because their relationships are hugely direct and the input is clear. I think that's probably about it, actually.
Well, I agree with all of that, and I think it's essential. I appreciate you bringing that perspective in. You know, narratives always evolve in one particular direction, but yeah, that I can't disagree with a single word of your perspective, and I think it's absolutely part of it. I think maybe if I have a thesis for the panel that I've been trying to get at today a little, it's the idea that somehow a model which is cooperative and offers artists a sense of journey through different opportunities and a sense of a definition between those different opportunities, whatever stage of art, you know, definitely remove the idea of the ladder and think of it more as a kind of, you know, a network, a cloud, and a sense in which the sort of money and support for that can be achieved through observation and response, and detailed observation, I think, is, yeah, that's where I'm coming from.
But to allow that journey and facilitate the joint learning, it's interesting. Why don't we know about your project in the pod? You know, yeah. It, again, as a community, in inverted commas, sitting here in our lecture format, it upsets me that we haven't got the structure to learn about a radical piece within a pod in rural Nottinghamshire or wherever it is. That actually, how fractured a community are we? Do we live in our own little pods? And actually, how much more to encourage talent development could we do to join up that web and join up these possibilities and that learning.
I think this lady here.
Hi, I'm Janet Smith. I'm the Artistic Director of Scottish Dance Theatre. I just want to say things I really responded to. The idea of a circle. I do feel that there is this hierarchical thing which intimidates and terrifies artists, and that somehow we haven't allowed our artists to grow up in this country. There's a way in which I've admired organisations and institutions in other parts of Europe which are artist-led, you know, buildings which are artist-led. And I often feel, and I even heard a little bit along the way this morning, that idea of we develop them. And it's something that grows up if one isn't aware of it. The power base is somehow inherent in our structures. And the other thing, just the idea of artist-led initiatives for creative development. And I took that a lot from the funnel. Thank you.
Sorry, did you have your hand up?
Thank you. Tony Rickey from the Bank of Scotland Imaginate Festival. First of all, just to pick up on what Nick was saying, I think to have more of these meetings in circles rather than this, I don't know about anybody else, but I get into a lecture theatre and just want to fall asleep. And also, you're the only ones that get water. I've just been sitting getting really thirsty watching you.
I know, it's been like handing them back like
a know, you should be passed them back in place. It was more an observation. It was actually a bit of a... It's always strange coming to one of these events and actually having a bit of a eureka moment. But it was the provocations this morning, which were all fabulous. But that really interesting one about that family thing and that also that investment for life and that relationship... I'm director of a festival, but also run an organisation which is about creative development, working for performing arts for children and young people. So the relationship is always about ongoing, but my mindset, and I think a lot of the times, is that investment you have with artists is time-related in that sense of how long you spend. When the money ends, you go back to the thing about exit strategies when the money ends and projects. And in a sense, looking at people in that sense as well, it's like, well, we finish now and we have to move on. We have to move on to another set of artists. So what are you going to do now and where are you going to go off? And just that realisation, I went back to my office yesterday and there was somebody there who we worked with about 2 or 3 years ago who was sitting in a corner of the office banging away on the computer. And I just suddenly got in now. The only thing that was missing there was actually the dirty washing of actually coming back and actually saying that they are actually a part of our lives, in a sense, and actually to stop looking upon these relationships as being set by times and actually saying that you've actually, you know, you've got the buggers for life. But that's a good thing and can be a bad thing. You can end up with part of your family being Auntie Heather, which can be a great thing as well. So it's that thing for me that I've really picked on from the discussion that we've had, particularly this morning.
James? James is down the front. Here we are.
I just from hearing the panel talk a bit, it made me think about thinking of talent as one as an artist and growing that artist and letting that artist do what they want is not actually the best kind of talent development. And actually, if you notice an artist that you think is doing good work and you think you want to develop that artist, actually to see the community that artist came from and why they are making good work and where it's come from. It's not about super jet fighter artists who are much better than other artists. They're all these artists are growing and being good at what they're doing because of a community that they've come from or a particular situation or circumstance that has grown this good art. And an investment in that community without having to pick out the talent, like individuals who are really good. It's about nurturing a community and hoping that good art pops out of it. Not necessarily good individuals, just good art coming up.
I think that connects very much with the observation about craft. And I think a community which is devoted to collectively improving its craft means that actually, you know, I think we're subsuming a lot of the idea of the individual generally, I think. You know, I think we're moving to a slightly more collective idea of ourselves as social beings, as beings who construct themselves through interaction, through socialisation. And so then the role of the artist within that seems to come under question, you know, the romantic idea of the individual whose vision is somehow unique, whether that's as a jet fighter or as a symphonic poet or whatever. And so I think, yeah, the part of this is a useful kind of reframing that I've taken from the responses is what none of us are talking about here is artist development, which enshrines a small set of individuals as superior beings and enables them to develop in the perfect kind of cocoon over a period of time. It's actually about enshrining processes where cooperation and collaboration and craft and conversation can kind of develop and emerge.
I think this gentleman at the back here has had his hand up for absolutely ages.
Thank you for pointing that out. Which gentleman?
The guy in the blue shirt.
Ah, yes. Oh.
It is kind of following on from what you're saying, Alex, and it's a word. I know there's lots of words been coming up, and I think one is trust. And what Gemma was saying about looking after the artist and then the artwork will look after itself, I think, has really struck me really strongly. And that's about trusting the artist to do that as well. Because my experience was, actually, one of them's here today, two relationships when I was developing my work as a producer, and that's Andy Arnold at the Arches and Neil Murray when he was at the Tron. And I just went to them with an idea and they trusted me to do it. And I think it's incredibly important. So I just wanted to add that in.
Hey, Frank McConnell from Plan B. I just wanted to say, and it's partly born out of, I've got this suspicion that Auntie Heather might be following us on Twitter. And if she is, there's lots of other people that are. And this notion, there's quite a lot of talk, and particularly last session, about failure and about the right to fail. And I just think there's a much better way of thinking it, and it's that really as artists we have a duty to experiment. And if the bigger organisations really believe that, we might get to a place where we can really develop talent.
You're completely right. Because that comes back to, you know, something I was going to say at the time about where do you find the value in a piece of work? Right? And if the value is only in the fact that it made lots of money or lots of people came to see it or everyone talked about it or got 4 stars in a review or something, then obviously failure is going to be a kind of ongoing element. But if you look at the value of a piece of work in a completely different way, then it's very rare that you'll have something that is, you know, irrefutably classified as a failure.
Hmm. I mean, I think there might be a failure. I mean, if someone involved in a project and it just collapses, but there might be a wider failure of ambition not to do that project in the first place. You know, you're too scared or you're too nervous or you're worried about how it's going to pan out, and that would be a
Sorry, Neil Murray from the National Theatre of Scotland. Thank you very much, Mr. Fitzpatrick. The cheque is in the post. I just wanted to pick up on the failure issue again, because I think it's something that we all deal with all the time. And I was slightly nervous by, I think you used the word celebrate failure, and that's what kind of makes me nervous, because I think failure is horrible. It's really painful. And it's painful when you're making the work, and it's even more painful when you've paid your money and you're sat in the audience. And that's that's where I think we can't celebrate it. I think we can put everything in place to try and stop it. If we're going to celebrate failure, I think we have to give the audience their money and their time back. And that's really hard, because I'm owed quite a lot of money over the years. And I think it's really difficult. And at the National Theatre of Scotland, we are one of the big organisations like Giles, but you know, I have to say, we put a lot of money into developing artists and right through their careers. And my colleague Caroline Newell does a fantastic job here.
But that sometimes does mean a stop in projects which we think might fail rather than taking to that stage of knowing where that point is and actually drawing a line, which is hopefully for everybody's benefit. And obviously the artist often doesn't agree with that. But the celebration of failure is something that slightly worries me. And I want to tell a very small joke to Tony Roberts. This is a friend of mine actually sent me this email yesterday saying he was out with his daughter, his three-year-old daughter, and he said to her, "Darling, let's go up the escalator." And she said, "I want to go up the escalator now." It's absolutely brilliant. And I think that's a brilliant parallel for developing an artist. I want to go up the escalator now. It took me about a week to get it. It's like Auntie Heather.
You've got to change the name.
Yeah, creative. Yeah.
This lady in the middle here. And then we'll take one from you and one from you, and I think we probably must have anything. Yes, and then we'll return to closing remarks.
Hello, Caroline from the National Theatre of Scotland. Your check's in the post, don't worry. I come to these things all the time and it really gives me the fear. And I think it's because I take the neurotic position. I'm not an artist and I come to these things and think, God, I've got to make everything better for everybody, which I know is a very personal thing. But I do think that we're all sitting here and we're all really dedicated to supporting talent. And is there a place where somebody has the information about how we're all doing it? Because we can't all do everything. And I always leave going, I've got to do it all. I can't do it all. No organisation can do it all. And probably between us, we're doing absolutely loads. But where is that information? Who has it? Can we have access to it so that we're not trying to be the archers and they're not trying to be imaginary? And that, you know, that between us, we're covering as many artists at many different levels as possible.
Yes, brilliant point. And something that I think in the sort of sense of, if we're in an ecosystem, there has to be a little bit of evolving and specialising and signalling. And, you know, artists should understand the plurality of opportunity that's available to them. And organisations should understand that we aren't competing with one another because we're offering distinct and different things. And how do if we can find a way of articulating that and sharing it in a simple way, I think that would be a really concrete achievement for... You know, and I think, you know, internationally as well, you know, I think being able to quickly grasp the kind of opportunities for partnership or development or whatever, you know, and, you know, can you keep it up? Can it be maintained? Does it go out of date the second you've made it? Lots and lots and lots of questions around it, which I don't think are necessarily easy to answer. I've got 1 minute.
1 minute.
Okay. I know that there's some members of the panel who want to finish up. So have you got, is it a quick one?
Of course, it's a quick one. Tassa Stevens and Coney. Yeah, there is no right to fail. There is an obligation to, when we do fail, to fail as well as possible. And it's how we respond to that, and resilience as a term, I think is kind of very important, and the kind of the qualities of that, and kind of what that kind of conversation is, and seeing that as part of a process. And I would say development, generally, psychologically speaking, and I first sat in this lecture theatre like about 23 years ago, for lectures in psychology, so it's really nice to be back. But all development, like even down to the neural level, happens through kind of what you can call U-shaped curves. It starts well, and then it kind of goes a bit bad for a bit, and then it kind of rebuilds stronger. And it's not actually able to develop kind of without that. And whilst I think there's a great danger in fetishizing a kind of a right to fail, or thinking that gives you an excuse to somehow try not, yeah. Not care whether you fail or not. Something's going to be at stake for you. But these kind of U-shaped curves we're continually going to be going through.
Brilliant. Okay, so closing remarks from the panellists. If there's anything you want to...
I just want to say one tiny, tiny quick thing which has come up a few times this morning and something that we're dealing or trying to deal with at BAC a lot, which is about hierarchy. And often there's an assumption in kind of creative processing, creative organisations, that actually organisations without hierarchy are somehow better than those ones with hierarchy. And I just want to kind of say that I think that's nonsense, because all organisations have hierarchy. I think even when you're a collective, that there is a hierarchy at play within that collective. Emma Rice, director of Knee-High, runs her rehearsal space by providing lots of oxygen in that rehearsal space where people can create and generate ideas and go off and come back, and she calls them... make me an offer, give, you know, show me a gift. But at the end of the day, she says what goes in and what goes out. And she says that's a really strong idea, but it's the wrong idea for this show. And I just think in terms of hierarchies, it's just worth all of us trying to be better at understanding them rather than being frightened of them.
My only response around hierarchies would be I agree with you, but I also agree that, but I also think that within our community there is a hierarchy of organisations and perception of individual hierarchies that doesn't help talent development, communication, sense of community. And I think we can do
it's such a brilliant way of dealing with that.
One thing about artist development programs and strategies and devices, which I suppose is what is supposed to be or hoped to be the outcome of this 2 days. And I just want to put in a word for like imagination and fun when we're thinking about the structures, because artists need something that's inspiring, wants something that's fun. Mm. And things like the Live Art Speed Date in Stoke Newington National Airport, it's one of the best development opportunities that you could think of, because it's full of imagination and it's full of fun, and it's both a provocation and an invitation to artists to do something really different in a celebratory environment. And let's think about, yeah, a bit of imagination and fun, and let's funders have the confidence to support or find ways, imaginative ways of supporting those kind of.
Andy, do you want to put the fun into funding?
I want to put fun into funding. Yeah.
Sorry. Anthony, any last thoughts?
Well, just I think most of it's been said, but that Stoke Newington International, it's a fabulous idea, and I think it's a really strong thing. And I think the key challenge for us is to be creative about making a space for people to be creative in. It's like a little kind of petri dish where you make the conditions, and then the virus.
Absolutely, and I think that if I there's too many brilliant ideas in this session to kind of condense it into any one thing, but I think if I would say one thing, it's that people are spontaneously creative. It's part of us being humans, and people also spontaneously organise themselves into social groups and systems, and that's a fact. Yet we have a system of support which doesn't seem to recognise that in any kind of meaningful way. I think it's important, really, really important, to note that. We've just been talking to a great length about the sort of admirable qualities of Forest Fringe and Stoke Newington International Airport, which are both organisations which they currently operate completely outside of any funding and support, and evolved out of responses
Not entirely true. Say BAC have supported Forest Fringe.
Okay, any sources, but certainly what I think, so leaving aside the details of that, I don't mean to get anyone into trouble, it's about the observation. It's about how can emerging processes be successfully observed, and how can that observation translate into action swiftly and meaningfully with discretion, with respect. And I think that that would be my pitch for what this group of people ought to be figuring out in the next hour. But anyway, we're right.
Thank you very, very much. We've gone through the coffee break.